Session number 10413, reel 10.
Mr. George Self, Reel 10. You were telling me about an incident while you were on the defences at Nicosia Airfield while our company was making a practice attack.
Do you want me to go back to the,
yes,
the scouts or the company?
Just as the company came through.
These scouts were approaching our forward defence, which was barbed wire. And we saw the company marching up this defile. By then, my boys were beginning to get itchy fingers because they didn't believe that I knew the scouts were. By then, the first scout, the leading scout who I knew and could see very plainly by then, had reached the wire, and there was a gate in the wire for us to go backwards and forwards. So I jumped out of the trench and went down to meet this sentry and asked him what the hell was going on. And he told me that his company was going to attack my platoon positions. So I said, well, you can go back to your company and tell them they're all dead. And I went back to my position and I phoned my company commander to let him know that we've been attacked. And he said, oh, I should have phoned you last night to tell you this was taking place. And this company overran us because I stood the men down. I wouldn't remove the live ammunition just in case somebody else had funny ideas. And the company company commander came to me of this B company. And he said to me, well, we did that very easy. So I took him down into my leading trench. And the brain gun was on a fixed line on this defile and still had its magazine, full magazine. I asked the section to open the rifle bolts and they all had one up the spout and the magazine's full. By then it was daylight, so I couldn't show him what I wanted to show him, that we could see anybody that moved in this defile and that this brain gun would have shot the lot of them. And so anyhow, he fell his troops in and marched off and reported to Battalion HQ that he'd captured 7 platoons. No, 13 platoons then. 13 platoons positions with no effort at all. So the next thing, the CO came down and I told him what I had done. Not what they'd done, what I'd done. Nowhere was I going to ask them to unload in case Jerry followed them. So that was quieting down. And I did hear after that I had been quite right in what I'd done. But they weren't going to tell me then. But no way was I going to unload. I was there for a purpose. It wasn't to play soldiers. If I'd been told the night before, so I could have got round the whole platoon, I probably would have done it, given fire orders with no ammunition. But you couldn't give fire orders when you've got live ammunition in, because somebody would have shot.
So Taylor was at fault there in not telling you?
Mm-hmm. No, Taylor was away at the time, and it was the second in command that had forgotten. Captain Reinhardt, he'd forgot to tell me, so that I could prepare each section and section leader and tell him what was going to happen, not to load with live ammunition, to give the fire orders off, so that people knew we were firing at them. But as I say, I could have shot a lot of them and they wouldn't have known. And then what my company went on this training. And just before we were going out on the Friday training, the RSM arrived with a truckload of hand grenades.
Would that be Spike Jennings,
Spike
your old
Jennings.
Enemy, as was?
Spike Jennings, yeah. And so the company commander, who was back then, decided that instead of doing a fieldcraft training, we would go out with these hand grenades, and everybody in the company would throw these live hand grenades. And not very far from where we were billeted was a grenade range. And so we went up there. We took 10 men onto the range, and the rest of the company stayed about 200 yards back. And I, along with Lieutenant Akak Wood, went into one fire bay, and another sergeant with Captain Reynard went into the other fire bay, and we took two at a time, throwing two hand grenades. And my job in there was to unscrew the plug at the bottom, inspect it for cracks, hand it to the officer, he placed the debt in, screwed it up, tightened it, handed it to the man, and he threw it. And we'd done about eight lads, they threw two apiece. I handed this hand grenade to this Lieutenant Woods, put the debt in, screwed up, gave it to Private Whaley, gave him the order to throw. As the hand grenade left his hand, it exploded. Whaley dropped on fell on the floor. Akak Wood fell on the floor, holding his stomach. There was blood running from his head. Nothing seemed to be the matter with me, just my tin hat had gone. So I jumped out of the fire pit, run onto the top of the escarpment, give the signal for a stretcher on the double. The boy in the other fire bay threw his grenade, and while I was giving him the sign for the double with the stretcher, his grenade went off. Again, I never felt nothing. Stretcher bearers doubled across, and the whole company came across because they realised that something had gone wrong. And I sent them down in this fire bay where the lieutenant and this private was. They put them on stretchers, brought them out, did what they could for them with field dressings. And then one of the stretcher bearers says to me, "Are you all right?" And I said, "As far as I know, I am." He said, "What's the blood on your hand?" And when I looked down, my hand was covered in blood. And I'd been wounded in the shoulder, in the bicep, in the forearm, in this leg.
Left leg.
In the left leg. Anything matter with her? Right leg, when they'd bandaged me up, said, "Not that I know of. Why, there's a lot of holes in your horse tops. Why, you better have a look." And I was wounded 3 times in this leg. And it wasn't till some time later I realised I'd been wounded from a grenade exploding there, hitting me this way. And this leg. But how did these get in at the back of the leg? And it wasn't long I realised that when I jumped on the escarpment, I had me back to the second grenade. And this happened about 2 o'clock. And they carried us down to a dried river bed, where the MO of the 6th Battalion came. I don't know what happened to our MO, but the 6th Battalion would probably be nearer there. And we were there for 3 hours. And this, they'd given us morphia. And this Akak wood was away. And I was sucking pots and pots of sweet tea. And this MO said to me, "I can't understand it. You should have been away to the woods before now." And round about 5 o'clock, maybe later than 5 o'clock, the ambulance eventually got to us, and they'd had to clear a way up this dried river bed to get it to us. And we were put in the ambulance, and the Akak Woods was below me in the ambulance. I was on the top, he was below, and the private was on the other side. And the MO came in the ambulance, felt Akak Wood's pulse, and said to me, "I'm sorry, but he's gone." And he stood a bit, and he said, "No, it's very faint. Get this thing on the move." Now I passed out just after we started moving. The morphia had eventually took hold. And I remember waking up in a ward in the hospital.
Nicosia Hospital.
Mm-hmm. And there was three beds. I was in the middle bed. This private that had thrown the grenade was in this one. And straight opposite it was two Cypriot soldiers. And this was about 7 o'clock. And nobody had attended us. And about 10 o'clock, we were still lying there, bleeding like stuffed pigs. And this sister walked in, and she said to me, "How long have you been lying here?" So I said, "When I woke up, it was 7 o'clock, and I was lying on this bed. Nobody been to see you?" I said, "Not a soul." Off she went. And about 2 minutes later, there was such a clatter coming down the passageway. And in walked this doctor and the sister, two orderlies. And again he asked how long we'd been there. And I said, "Well, I woke up about 7 o'clock. "Oh," said, "you come in with the officer?" So I said, "Yes, we came with the officer." Apparently, we were on the bottom floor and the officer had been took among the aristocracy on the next floor. So I said, "How is he, by the way?" So he said, "I'm afraid he died at 7:15. So he said, "I won't be 5 minutes and I'll come and have a look." And off he went. He came back with a matron and he looked at his private affairs because he was only wounded. Luckily, he was only wounded in the thigh. And sent for the x-ray machines, somebody to come and wash us down. Then he had a look at me, and then in trooped the sister off the day shift, the orderlies, the nurses, and boy, did he lace into them. And apparently they had gone off duty at 8 o'clock at night and never done anything about it. So they washed us down, x-rayed us, and he came back with the x-rays and he said, "Do you know where you are?" And I said, "No, I didn't know where you are. All I know, we're in hospital." Well, he says, "You're in the Nicosia General Hospital, the civilian hospital." So he took this boy down the operating theatre and he was back about 20 to 12. And came for me next. And I can remember him lying us on this table. And the theseist, as a theseist they call them, had been in to see me and have a talk to me while they were on with him. And she started preparing put me to sleep, and he had these x-rays, and he said to me, "That's an x-ray of your left leg, your right leg, your right shoulder. Never mind about the bloody pictures, get me to sleep and get on with it." And I knew no more till I woke up and the visitors was in. So I took it to be Sunday afternoon. And this young Cypriot boy opposite me, his mother and his sister were with him. And when I stared, I had this arm in a, what they call an aeroplane splint.
Right.
And I reached for a tab. It's the first thing I always do. And these two women came running over to me. And this boy says they could talk English, but the mother couldn't. And asked me how I was. And just then the sister of the ward came in, told me to put this cigarette out and run out the ward. Came back, cleared all the visitors out. And this old doctor came. And he said to me, "I'm pleased to see you've come round." He said, "Do you know what day it is?" Well, I said, "It looks as though it's Saturday where the visitor's been in." He said, "It's Wednesday. You've never opened your eyes since we put you to sleep on Friday night till now." And he said, "I have sent 5 telegrams to your mother." Critically ill. But he says, "I'm happy to say now you've come round, I think you'll start to get better." And they had to take me down again the following week because there was still shrapnel in this leg.
So when was that accident? What month roughly?
October. October the 8th, to be exact. 2 dates I never forget. Anyhow, about 2 days, on the following Saturday after I'd come round, this MO from the 6th Battalion came in to see me and told me that he'd first took us to a field ambulance where they wanted to amputate my right arm. And he told them to put them back in the ambulance, he'd bring us to the civvy hospital, where there was more amenities. And the only English people that was in that hospital was the night sister, the doctor, and the matron. The rest were Turks, Cypriots. And I was in there for quite a while.
You were well cared for, though, were you?
Oh, yes. I was well cared for. I was quite a while before I was allowed solid foods. And I always remember he came in to see me one night and he said, "I'm pleased to tell you that you can go on solids tomorrow. So order your breakfast." So when the sister came in the next morning, I said to her, "I'm on solids today. I'll have bacon and eggs." And when the breakfast came up and it was a plate of olives and cheese and this dark bread that they eat, you know. And I says to her, "No way am I eating that." So the doctor came in about 10 o'clock and he says to me, "How did you enjoy your breakfast?" I said, "I'll enjoy it tomorrow because I haven't had a booger today." So he says, "Why haven't you had one?" So I said, "What, cheese and olives?" Them two buggers over there might eat them, but not me. She said, what you got for your breakfast? I said, that's what was sent up to me. So off he went. And about ten or quarter past ten, I was eating eggs and bacon. And every Thursday, a major out of the medical corps used to come to this hospital and visit the British troops. And if you were getting better, used to take you out to a military hospital. Now, it used to cost £2.10 a day for me being in there, which was a lot of money in them days. And so every Thursday, this old man took me down to the theatre till this major had been and gone. And he kept me in there for 2 months. And eventually I went to the military hospital at Larnaca to wait for the hospital board coming to take us away for convalescent, because when I got back onto my feet, I had to learn to walk again. I used to walk with 2 sticks. When the hospital boat did come, it was overloaded, so I wasn't able to go. So I was sent to a transit camp back in Nicosia the day before Christmas Day. And I still had this open wound in my leg. And I eventually went to Haifa, Palestine.
Now, just before we go on, the one thing we didn't cover, when you first got to Cyprus, how did you get on with the local civilians on Cyprus, and what sort of recreations did you have?
Some you got on with. When we went on the aerodrome, you got a day off from Reed Valley to 23:59 hours. You used to go down Nicosia, but you weren't allowed down without your weapon. That was a rifle, 5 rounds in your magazine, but the cut-off end, so there was none at the spout. Because majority of the Cypriots were looking for trouble with the British soldiers.
Why was that? Did you know?
They didn't want anything to do with the British soldier, as they proved after the war. A lot of them were these Greek Cypriots. Then you had the Turkish Cypriots. They used to fight each other. They would knife you as soon as look at you. You did meet a lot of people that welcomed you. I mean, this young boy that was in the hospital with me, his mother and father owned the mineral water factory in Nicosia. And his sister, who could talk perfect English. I always remember I was asleep one day when they were in, and I used to wear a DLI ring with a cap badge on. When I woke up, the ring had gone. And I asked the sister and that where this ring had gone. And eventually this boy's sister came back with this ring, and she'd had it dipped in gold. When I went to this transit camp, I met this young boy in Nicosia, and he wanted to take me home with him. But unfortunately, it was in the Outer Bounds area. Anyhow, I saw the camp commandant, and providing I went by taxi straight to the house, okay. And so I went to meet his mother and father again. And I had a great day there with them. But unfortunately, I put my foot in it.